Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
They exchange about 3 sentences, decide to leave, and they're doing it in a limo immediately.
Hell yeah, they are.
And
welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
You know the theory? That Yuri was sent here by the KGB while he was still in his teens. And for all intents and purposes, he can pass as an American.
Oh, Scott, they've been talking about that for 4 years. It's the CIA's wet dream. There's never been a shred of evidence.
But now, there is.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Yep. We've got different shades of blue shirts on. It's freaking me out, man. I don't know what it is.
Deeper shade of blue on that side. Whoa, that side.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, that was counterintuitive.
Yeah, it was not worth the time that I took to talk about it. Anyway, Recotopia, episode 29. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott.
And today's big recommendation is No Way Out. How's everybody in chat doing?
Good to see you, beautiful people.
We see a lot of the familiar faces. I think a couple new ones in there that are, I don't know. Josh says Chris is dressed as Jeremy's couch. That's correct. Took a piece of upholstery and made a shirt out of it. No, why not?
I have to inform you that my cats actually own that couch, not me.
That's true. So it was really more of a deal between me and the cats, and Jeremy was an absentee lawyer on that. All right, well, do you got any small recommends that you want to talk about?
It's no big deal.
Itty-bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
Tiny little small recommends. I'm going to start with a food-related recommend.
Food-related?
Because my wife and I make the best scrambled eggs. And when I take pictures and put them online, look at this. He's got a photo. That is a producer right there. Aaron Dyser. Producer extraordinaire. Photo. Those are even my scrambled. No, they're not. But when I post photos of my scrambled eggs, I get compliments on how delicious they look. Well, they are delicious, and I'm going to just give you a few tips if you're not doing them that might improve your scrambled egg game. Okay. The first thing is get all your eggs. Don't crack them into the skillet. Get all your eggs cracked into a bowl. Mm-hmm. Make sure you get all the pieces of shell out of here. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most people at this point might throw some salt and pepper in. That's totally awesome. And then just put it on the skillet. Please don't do that. You need to add a little bit of milk, just a little splash of milk. This will give you that creaminess that restaurant scrambled eggs have that you don't get if you don't. Now maybe you don't do dairy, but that's all right. I don't do dairy, but there's a couple of, there's lactate milk, it was lactose free, or A2 milk, which has one of the common proteins in milk removed. Throw a little bit of dairy in there. You could even use heavy cream if you wanted to, if your stomach can handle heavy cream. Mine cannot. Now we're ready to put it in the pan. This is another thing that people do, is they put the pan up too high in the heat. You're going to keep this thing low. You want it low. low and slow, like from Cars, right? And you just fold it. Actually, you pour it in and you leave it alone for about 30 seconds, and it'll start to firm up around the edges, and then you just fold it. Don't use a metal spatula or even a spatula. Use one of these polyurethane, whatever the plastic is that's food safe that they're making everything out of these days.
Mm-hmm.
It has a wooden handle, like in the picture. Use one of those daubers, and then just fold. And just keep folding the eggs. Don't ever let them rest. Another tip, Gordon Ramsay taught me this. Take it off the heat for 30 seconds and keep folding. Then put it back on the heat and keep going. This helps it to cook slower. My wife throws some cheese in here about a minute before we're done. That's totally excellent and always welcome, but you don't have to do it. Now, the final key. I promise this will make all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh herbs.
Okay.
Go to the grocery. Most of them sell these little plastic containers now that have a little bundle of fresh herbs. Get you some dill, get you some thyme maybe some parsley. Chop all that up real fine, and you sprinkle it over the top of your eggs before you eat, and that will take everything to the next level. All right? Now, my next recommend is going to be a combination of a few films that Chris has already recommended. So I had to pull something out of my butt for a recommend today, and I chose my scrambled eggs because no one has ever complained.
But
they are freaking delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like scrambled eggs, try making it that way just once and see if that changes your world.
Okay. I cook eggs every morning. I don't scramble them though. Just for various reasons. No, I cook it basically like an omelet, and I eat it like an omelet.
Okay.
But I add the cheese and the salt and the pepper and all that when it's in the skillet. I do all the stuff like you're talking about in the bowl. Put it in the skillet nice. When it's heat. It's medium heat, not low, but
medium works if you can do it faster at medium. I just like to take my time.
But if I wanted to, I have occasionally been like, you know what? Screw this today. I'm going to do the scrambled, and I'm going to do some pretty good scrambled eggs too. So, so once again, I was taking a look at the Criterion Channel and looking for some movies that I haven't seen ever, and some stuff that, you know, I've heard of this, but I've never seen it, and that seem to run across these a lot. The one that I saw over the weekend was this was called Sweet Smell of Success.
That Michael J. Fox movie.
Yeah. It has Burt Lancaster and Tony Curtis in it, and Tony Curtis is a guy who plays a press agent for people who want to get their names in the paper and all that. And Burt Lancaster runs this gossip column, I guess, or something into that nature that is the most widely read in the world. And they are comparing him. If you look to the story outside of the movie, there was a guy named Walter Winchell back in the day who was this kind of guy. That's who Burt Lancaster is basically playing. But Tony Curtis is playing this guy who hasn't been able to get his stuff in this guy's paper for a really long time. And he's trying to figure out a way in. Burt Lancaster says, "Hey, you know what? My sister's about to marry this musician, and I don't like that guy. Like, is there a way that we can possibly break them up and get something in the gossip columns about him? Obviously I can't write this because it's my sister or whatever. Can we do something? Can we figure it out?" So Tony Curtis goes through this journey through the night, basically, where he is trying to find other people who will write something salacious about this musician. And he has to go through a lot of underhanded stuff. He's kind of Tony Curtis is not playing a very cool dude in this movie at all. He uses every bit of leverage he has against a lot of people to try to get what he wants out of this. And ultimately he does get one of these writers to write something bad about a musician. In fact, implies that he's smoking weed and that he's a communist card carrying guy or whatever. So that breaks them up temporarily. And now Burt Lancaster wants to swoop in and make good with his sister, but he also doesn't want them to get back together. So there's all this stuff going back. There's sort of a backtrack thing going on. She's wondering if her brother is behind it at all, if Tony Curtis is behind it at all, whatever, all these type of things going through. But man, what's unique about this movie is the dialogue in this. Like everybody in this movie, they don't say anything normally. Like they I'll get to some of the stuff that they say later because we have a question. If we don't get to that question, and I've just said that we're going to get to this question, there's a question later that asks about dialogue you've heard recently or whatever.
Yeah, and, yeah. I'll make sure I bump that question to the top.
I'll give you a few, and it's not even the list that I'm going to give you is not even like scratch the surface of how many things that these people say in this movie. So this is just a dynamic powerhouse. You know, that's two huge stars back in 1957. Apparently, there was a lot of fighting on set on this, not between the two stars, but Lancaster and the director and everything. Apparently this was a tough movie to make, but it's so modern looking for a 1957 movie. Like you will, when you're watching this, you're like, this doesn't feel like something that came out of the 50s at all. Like it just, it seems like a modern movie. So, interesting. Hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds very interesting. I had never even really heard of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get this Criterion service.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the reason Jeremy never recommends Criterion movies. Mm-hmm. That he doesn't currently have the service.
Yeah. Slab, by the way, says Chris recommends a Criterion movie. Take a drink. Well, there you go. You guys are gonna get pretty drunk listening to this podcast when I recommend something Criterion. So because it's either I'm gonna watch it on the channel or I'm gonna order some new 4K transfer that they got they got good movies. So.
You're all right, man. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, I had my brother staying with me, and mm-hmm. we watched a bunch of movies. If you follow me on Twitter, you already know a bunch of what we watched. Sadly, almost everything we watched has already been discussed by Chris on this show as a small recommend, but I did want to go ahead and give my small thoughts to double recommend, in case none of you have taken the plunge, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent with Nick Cage.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know what to expect. My brother and I sat there staring at the Amazon screen, and it said, rent for $5.99, buy for $14.99.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what are the odds I'm going to like this enough that I want to watch it again and again and again? Probably not very good. So I went with rent for $5.99. Well, now I own the movie, mm-hmm. so I paid both of those prices because we laughed almost nonstop. It turns into a pretty straightforward action movie by the last 20 minutes, almost because it has to. It can almost not go anywhere else. So the laughs aren't as aplenty in the last 20 minutes. But it is the movie it should be, in every sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage is clearly having fun, having a blast,
mm-hmm.
mocking his many various personality quirks over the years. There's a younger Nick Cage from
so amazing.
The 90s who appears to him and talks to him and gives him terrible advice. And ultimately he has to stand up to Nicky, this other bad mm-hmm. persona. It's just very, very funny, unexpectedly funny. That's the movie that The Lost City thought it was going to be. The Lost City has some laughs. Massive Talent has them all throughout for me. Pedro Pascal is having a freaking blast.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. if you're on the fence, this movie is really, really funny. I've watched it at least one time since my brother left.
Mm-hmm.
We also watched Elvis, which Chris kind of recommended. He didn't say it was amazing. And I would have to agree wholeheartedly. It's mm-hmm. entirely worth a watch for two reasons for me. Austin Butler, the guy that plays Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the trailer, I thought he looked awful. Watching the movie, I thought he was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene near the end where he's playing old Elvis on all kinds of pills, doing a concert, performing a song. Cuts away to something else and then cuts back, and it's footage of real Elvis from the same real event. And he had been nailing it. The other reason to watch is the music. They take Elvis songs and other songs, and they put, this is a very Baz Luhrmann thing to do, they put a modern beat underneath them, and they also fuse them together like medleys in unexpected places. And the music is A++. It's Baz. It's a very hyper-kinetic edited movie in many places. It's overly long, but this is probably my favorite Baz Luhrmann movie. I was entertained the whole way through. There you go. My brief thoughts on Already Small Recommended Movies by Chris.
I didn't, you know, it was one of those things like, I was like, well, after the founder thing where we, you know, we recommended that twice or whatever, like, what's the protocol on what when we watch something that the other person recommended, like, you know, is there something there? And like, I don't think there's any problem recommending something again. It's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe we just have to acknowledge it or whatever that it's been
well,
done.
I mean, so. I'll probably try to avoid it in the future. But I just didn't have anything else prepped until you noticed it. Right before the show. So,
Occasionally we get stuff in our post office box, and there was a package. I don't know. Probably, God, it's been 4 months ago that came in. And I don't know if this guy Tristan still listens to the Recotopia. I know that he used to listen to Sincast and everything like that, and he used to talk on Facebook and everything. But maybe he still listens, and he listens to Recotopia. But he sent a whole bunch of these like martial arts movies, and he was like the resident martial arts guy. So anytime we ever talked about martial arts or whatever, he would get on Facebook and say this movie's great or this movie's terrible or whatever. Blah 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 blah. He sent me a whole bunch. And one of them is an early Gareth Evans movie called Marantau, which has Iko Uwais in it, it's the story of he is a kid who is there's some sort of rite of passage. They call it Marantau, which is like a spiritual physical journey of some sort. It just so happens that the physical spiritual journey here is he's being sent to Jakarta in Indonesia. He gets there and he has a meal at this restaurant, and this little kid, is trying to steal food at the restaurant, and he finds out that, the kid's also stolen his wallet. So there's a point where the kid runs out, and Iko Uwais chases after the kid, and there's this big long chase scene. Finally catches him, gets his wallet back. But when he does this, he notices there's some other commotion going on behind him, and it just happens to be this little kid's sister who is being pimped out by this dude. And he's yelling at her and berating her and basically trying to steal all of her money and all that. And of course, there's a point where it's about to get physical, and Iko Uwais comes in and saves the day. But she's like, you know, now I won't be able to get a job, and, you know, you screwed this up and blah, 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 even though he saved her and all that. But as this story goes along, he continues to run into this pimp guy, but this guy isn't even the big bad of the movie. He's furnishing women for the big bad of the movie, who's like some, like, I don't know, Irish guy or something, Welsh. I don't even know. I did not bother to check, and I'm sorry, but like he's just some white dude who's out in Indonesia, and he's like hiring girls, and he's eventually going to ship them off wherever he works or whatever, everything. So, obviously there's so many bad guys in this movie. Iko Uwais ends up like going in and beating a bunch of ass. That's what this whole movie's about. Right. You know, it's this, it's at first you can tell this movie, Gareth Evans hasn't quite mastered the raid stuff yet. I don't know if he shot this in order or what, but from the beginning of the movie, there's a lot of like cutting and a lot of like, you know, the fighting is okay. It's just that it's all over the place. Midway through the movie. And like I said, if he shot this in order and he started learning as he was going along,
interesting.
Midway through the movie, it starts getting a lot better and it starts getting a little bit more ratey. And it starts getting a lot more exciting to watch. And there's a lot of like cool, you know, stunts and a lot of cool choreography and fight choreography and everything like that. And it does have the problem that I have with some movies where like the big bad who has shown no proficiency in fighting whatsoever ends up with him and his henchmen fighting Iko Uwais at the end of the movie, and they're like badasses, and I'm like, okay, if you guys were this badass, couldn't we have seen that beforehand before we got into this fight? But if you like Gareth Evans and you want to see kind of where he was before the Raid movies and everything like that, and you want to see Iko Uwais do his usual kick-ass moves and everything, Marantau is definitely worth a watch. It takes a bit to get going, but I think it's overall it's something that you would enjoy if you like those those guys, and you also have Yayan Ruyan, who plays in the other Raid movies as well, shows up in this as well. And of course, there's a big fight with him and Yuhiko Uwais in an elevator, which is really cool. So,
all right, that's going on the list.
Yep.
That sounds awesome.
All right, are we ready for the big recommend?
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
The big one this week, the big recommend is No Way Out.
Mm-hmm,
1987 mm-hmm. Kevin Costner movie, credited by many with being his star-making turn, which is odd because this is the same year that Untouchables came out.
Yeah.
Dude made No Way Out, Untouchables, Bull Durham, and Field of Dreams, back to back to back to back.
Yep.
That's a pretty good run. this is a movie about a naval officer whose buddy works for the Secretary of Defense, Gene Hackman, and is trying to get Costner a job with the Secretary of Defense. And Costner's sort of portrayed as this kind of a badass. Like, it's even shown him doing a big, daring, dangerous rescue on the ship before he gets stationed at the Pentagon. and of course, after reading the story of that heroic rescue, Gene Hackman's character decides, I need that guy to come work for me. I need a guy to work for me. Gene Hackman's biggest bugaboo for the first 45 minutes of the movie is the Phantom Sub, which he does not believe exists, but which the CIA and the FBI and NSA and everybody else believes exists, and they're all up the president's ass about it, and he's trying to get this financing killed so that they can spend it on important matters of defense. Kevin Costner meets Sean Young at a party, and they fall in love in about 3.2 seconds.
Takes no time, yeah.
They exchange about three sentences, decide to leave, and they're doing it in a limo immediately.
Hell yeah, they are.
And I like their chemistry. I think they have pretty good chemistry together. And I realize that one night stands happen and sometimes turn into long-term things in the real world, but I feel like there's some stuff on the cutting room floor of them
flirting. Probably is.
anyway, they begin a torrid affair. He does get assigned at the Pentagon to work for Gene Hackman, and he finds out that Sean Young also has another lover, and that other lover we know is Gene Hackman.
Oh,
Secretary
shit.
Of Defense.
Holy fuck.
And Costner only knows he's some muckety-muck bigwig in Washington, D.C., and it makes him jealous. One night, they are together. She tells Costner to leave because Secretary of Defense is driven up outside, and she doesn't want them to meet each other. Now, why would you? She also, I think at this point, knows that he works for this guy. So she shoos Costner out the back room, out the back door, and he goes around the side and, in my opinion, quite stupidly, turns the corner and stops and stares right at the man approaching his lover's door. Hackman looks over. Thank God for the shadowy tree.
Can't make out
the face. And he goes inside. And he gets super mad that she was just sleeping with somebody else. Super, super mad. Essentially slaps her. She tumbles over the balcony and lands on a glass table and she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's about 45 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Like, the movie plays like almost a straight romance film up until this point.
And I'll break in just for a moment because this movie doesn't seem like it doesn't follow like it doesn't seem to my eyes anyway, follow like a true three act structure at first, because usually the first act should be done around the 25-30 minute area. And this one feels like the first act goes on until that 45 minute area, because there's no inciting incident until then that brings us into the real story or whatever. So anyway,
I there's a lot that's interesting about this movie. It opens with a 3.5 minute overhead shot of Washington DC over the credits that ultimately, if you want to, it gives you the exact directions to the exterior of that house that they shot, because the camera never breaks. Anyway, all right, so now Gene Hackman's like, well, shit, I accidentally killed someone. Mm-hmm. I've done this in other movies too, but in this movie, I got my right-hand man, Will Patton. That's Costner's buddy, who the movie casually declares is homosexual in one moment, which I think is just to show off how much intel the CIA guys have.
Yeah.
And he comes over and he suddenly got a big plan. He says, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to pin this on Yuri. Yuri is this probably fictitious Russian spy that's rumored in all of the spy agencies to have infiltrated the U.S. in his teens and can speak perfect fluent English. And he's been a mole at some agency ever since. And almost everyone poo-poos this rumor as being plausible. But he decides, let's say it's Yuri that was sleeping with this woman and he killed her. And because it's Yuri, we can make a special investigation that doesn't involve anybody else and we can keep control until we get this all tightened down. And thus begins the intrigue, because they turn to Kevin Costner and assign him the job of finding himself.
Yes.
You need to find the lover of this woman because we know it's Yuri. Costner knows it's not Yuri. He knows it's him. There's a lot of great acting in this. A lot of great... I love Will Patton. He's super evil in this movie. George Junza, who's one of my favorite character actors.
Yeah.
He's in Basic Instinct and Crimson Tide.
He
plays... Costner's buddy, who's basically the computer expert. I love all the tech era specific stuff about this movie. Calling from payphones might be bugged. We got these giant freaking computers that look like they're from the 50s. He wants to print out a list of gifts given to dignitaries, and it's on like that old school 80s, you know, printer paper.
Yeah.
Good God. And it all works. It works perfectly well within the confines of this story. So it doesn't really end up feeling like dated, because it just feels like a period piece. So Costner has to contend with these two assassins that Patton has brought in to be heavies in case a heavy is needed. He's trying to protect the dead girl's friend, who the heavies at one point go after. There are actually two foot chases between Kevin Costner and the two assassins. And I found that a little bit interesting. But the one takes place through the halls of the CIA, the Pentagon, which is pretty cool. And basically, it comes to where Costner is about to be exposed because they have two witnesses, a guy that he rented a boat from, and some other guy. I don't remember what he did. He was a waiter, I think.
Yeah, he was the bellhop or whatever at the hotel that they went to.
That's right. And they're walking them all through the CIA to point out who Yuri is. Costner even hides in the ceiling, like he's in freaking Die Hard at one point in this movie. Comes down to this final confrontation between him and Costner, or him and Hackman, where he says, I know it was you. I know you killed her. I've got this proof right here on this piece of paper that says you got this gift. We got it at her house. It's going to have your fingerprints on it. Blah, 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 blah. You're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And then Will Patton comes in, and all fucking hell breaks loose. Guns are pointed, and things are fighting. And then my trigger happens, which I did not warn you guys about, and I apologize if you have that same trigger. I remembered well before this moment and just left the room. Will Patton character takes his own life when he realizes that there's proof that his boss is guilty. And now maybe the reason they mention his homosexuality is that they wanted to imply he had feelings for Hackman, because he talks early on about this is the greatest mind I've ever known.
Yeah.
Brilliant man. I tend to think it's more just admiration, and he realizes he's going to jail as much as anybody is, so he takes his own life. This actually is a gift to the still living members in the room, because now they can say that he was Yuri, and they can tie it all up in a neat little bow. And Costner says, "Well, maybe I'll go along with it, maybe I won't."
Mm-hmm.
And he leaves, and he goes off to do some thinking. And I told you to watch it. I guess we can reveal the big reveal.
Yeah,
He is found by one of the agencies searching for him, taken for an interrogation, and out comes a Russian military boss, because Costner was Yuri all along.
What?
Bum, bum,
bum.
So I had a really good time watching this again. Some of the cheesiest freaking 80s music ever in the first 20 minutes of this movie. Mm-hmm. That may be the most dated thing about the movie. Let's hear from Chris. Chris, what are your thoughts this time around?
It's funny also, there's mentioning the opening credits, really weird. I think they're like trying to make them out to be like blinds or something, like the last names of everybody. This movie's directed by Roger Donaldson, who of Species fame, later of Species fame. I really like this, and I wish Sean Young wasn't a murder victim in this, because I love Sean Young a lot. I love everything about her, and there's that old story about how she tried out for Catwoman in Batman Returns. Now, she wasn't going to get it because Michelle Pfeiffer was way too big of a star. And, of course, Michelle Pfeiffer did an iconic turn as Catwoman in Batman Returns. But there is a part of me, actually, there's a whole part of me that wants to see Sean Young play Catwoman back in 1992. That's just the, I just love characters like this, like she plays here. This is it's got a lot of like fun intrigue. I think there is a point where it's like, okay, get on with it already. Like it gets to that point where he's kind of in a dead end. And it's like there's all this like, oh, we didn't find Yuri on this on this run through. Let's go back through the building now. And it's like they go through the building, and it's like he hides up into the ceiling and all this, and that program that's trying to get the photograph, the Polaroid. That they find some negative on the back of the emulsion of something or whatever, and they're able to kind of like run it through the cycle and like tell the computer to look for something in particular. Like, I guess like the test they show is like, let's make it look like a baboon or something like that. And so like this picture shows up as a baboon or whatever. And it's like, well, we can direct it however we want to. Apparently takes as long as it takes for the movie's plot to unfold to get this Polaroid to show that it's Kevin Costner at the end. That just seems like that just takes forever. And there's so many things this guy is asking of George Zunza to do in this. Like, George Zunza finally does the right thing. Of course, he tells the wrong person.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there thinking, if you're part of a CIA or whatever like that, and some asshole tells you, well, this is my version of the events that happened, you're going to find me on this picture, and I don't want anybody to know anything about it. Don't you kind of suspect that guy of trying to cover up his tracks and everything? Like, I know that you guys are buddies, and boy, is that convenient, right? They're always buddies with the people that can help them the most. But no, overall, I really do enjoy this movie. I think there's a reason why Costner ends up becoming one of the biggest stars that one of the biggest stars of this era. Like, you mentioned Field of Dreams. Right after Field of Dreams, he's doing Dance with Wolves. He's directing that and starring in that. He had this run that was incredible. Kevin Costner and Julia Roberts were the biggest biggest stars of the era, and I think would maybe the next to last real movie star era, really, because DiCaprio, Pitt, and all them show up later. Clooney, Damon, all those people show up, and I think those are the last ones, really. After this, it's not going to be as big as it was. But anyway, I just love how this unfolds. It's kind of it's not the same story as The Departed, but it's got that same kind of like, what if you were tasked to chase after someone who is you?
Yeah.
And I like the idea that, you know, how he discovers, cause you know, Hackman and Patton don't have any idea that Costner is involved.
Right.
So they come in and like, we want you to find this guy who's Yuri, who's fake, but it turns out isn't fake, and turns out is Kevin Costner. We want you to find this guy, and then so Costner knows everything at that point. Like, knows he already knew Hackman was involved, but now he knows that there's another person that they're looking for, and like, they don't know that. They don't know that it's him, and that's a really intriguing part of it. So that sustains it throughout. I wish Sean Young could have been one of the investigators or something. I don't know. She wouldn't have been playing the same character at that point.
No, but that's true. And it's funny that you say that she, you know, auditioned for Catwoman, because IMDb says Michelle Pfeiffer turned No Way Out down.
Really?
And Sean Young ended up getting that role.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. I also love the big guy that they rent the boat from. That's the same guy from Tin Cup. That's Costner's buddy that says the word normal and him don't often collide in the same sentence. <That's
that laughs> yep.
All right.
That's another thing. Another thing that I enjoyed about it, since everybody knows this person, like that, there's a pretty Jason Bernard, who you know from as the judge in Liar Liar, is one of the investigators in this. He is pretty certain, because of what he's been told and what he's been fed, that this person is in the building. And so when this guy, this witness, comes in and says, "There he is, there's the guy," or whatever, and they don't know it's Costner, and Costner runs out of view, and then they're chasing after him. Oh, I love those little touches that they add in there, because everything, if you take it from the side of people who are not Costner, everything seems pretty plausible for what's going on. Like, they're not dumb. They're just, this seems all plausible and everything. Yeah. The only person I would take to task is George Zunza, but I like George Zunza too. So
yeah.
Anyway.
All right. What is our super secret surprise double feature?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Okay, well, this one was thought up immediately, and you probably even thought of it too, Absolute Power is the movie that I came up with for the double feature here.
Gene Hackman accidentally kills his mistress.
Indeed. Yes, yes again. Gene Hackman always be killing those mistresses, y'all. In Absolute Power, Clint Eastwood is a jewel thief of some sort, and he goes into this house, and he's robbing, like, just, and apparently what they say later is like $5 million worth of money and watches and jewels and things like that. And he hears a noise. I'm like, oh no, that's the worst thing that the thief can hear is a noise while he's stealing all this money. He goes into this closet, which just so happens to have a two-way mirror for some reason. Why is that? Gene Hackman and, for you Office fans, Melora Hardin, who played Steve Carell's boss in The Office, are about to engage in sexual activity. And Gene Hackman knows that she likes it rough, but he gets a little too rough. Mm-hmm. And he ends up getting so rough that she gets rough back, and then the Secret Service, played by Scott Glenn and Dennis Haysbert,
yep,
come in and shoot her dead, and they have to cover it up with the help of Judy Davis, who is also the head of state or secretary of state or something like that. And so once again, Hackman, he didn't mean to kill the mistress, or he didn't mean to be involved in killing the mistress, but he did. And mm-hmm. It just so happens to be his best friend one of his friends played by E.G. Marshall, that's whose wife it was. God, Melora Hardin is like making out with Gene Hackman, who's 38 years older than she is, and is married to E.G. Marshall, who's some 70 years older, I think, something like, not 70, but something like, it's like 50 years older. The same sort of stuff goes on here, because Clint Eastwood can't go to the police and say he saw this, because he's a jewel thief. He just stole a whole bunch of money, and he would be the one implicated probably if he went in and confessed. But he stole one thing that the Secret Service needs to completely cover it up. He stole this letter opener that Melora Hardin used to stab the president, and he's got it in this Ziploc bag all the way through the movie and everything. Laura Linney plays Clint Eastwood's daughter, lawyer daughter. Mm-hmm. Yep, in this. So anyway, Absolute Power, not a fantastic movie, but certainly solid movie, directed by Clint Eastwood back in 1997.
I actually read that book too.
Oh yeah, the David Baldacci.
It was one of his first hits, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was at that point in my life looking for a new Grisham, he probably could have been it, but I fell off of reading his books after a while. But that's an excellent pick. I even casually joked earlier about Gene Hackman accidentally killing people.
I was a little worried you were about to say something there for a second, but that's okay. And I actually thought, because of the Phantom Sub, Hunt for Red October would be a thing, but that Phantom Sub thing is not really a big part of this movie. It seems like it's going to be, but
like MacGuffin Jr.
Yeah, it's MacGuffin Jr. You got Fred Dalton Thompson connection there.
He's in both movies.
And there's a line he says that I swear to God he came up with on the set about Will Patton's homosexuality in it, where he said something like, well, there's a chapter in the Old Testament that says he will, you know, be basically saying going to hell for what he's doing or whatever. I'm just like, that's something Fred Dalton Thompson probably came up with on set. That's what it sounds like. And then you had like the Crimson Tide connection too, with Gene Hackman and George Zunza, and all these future submarine movie guys in this movie. So that was kind of a fun thing in there. So
Slab just said he needs a reason to watch Tin Cup, buddy. I'm gonna give it to you in about a week's time.
Yeah.
Chris, what is next week's homework?
The next week's homework is a movie that came out last year, and I'm not sure that you've seen it.
I haven't.
And I'm hoping that a lot of people out there may be seeing this for the first time, because this is an excellent movie, The Worst Person in the World. Mm. This movie is offbeat. It's humorous. It's got a lot of drama to it, but you will think about your life. This is one of those movies where you think about your life a lot after you watch it. But it's got a good mix of offbeat comedy and drama all rolled up into one. And, this was a pleasant, I don't know if it was a surprise. Everybody was telling me how good this movie was before I watched it, but I was surprised at how good it was actually by the time I got around to it. So we're going to do that one next week. I can't wait till you see it, Jeremy. I think this will be right up your alley as well.
Yeah. We almost watched this, on my brother movie marathon. It's on Hulu right now with a regular subscription. So this should be available. It's available to rent for $1.99 and several other places. And I have never heard anything bad about this movie. I'm very excited that you picked it. So your homework is The Worst Person in the World.
All right.
Now let's get to a couple of questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
Start with one that I know Chris wants to start with. What is a fun quote from a recent watch?
So in the prior small recommend, Sweet Smell of Success. And like I said, this isn't even touching it, but like there are so many like cool lines in this. Tony Curtis plays a guy named Sidney Falco, and his secretary at the beginning of it says something like, where do you want to get? And Tony Curtis says, way up high, Sal, where the air is balmy. And then he goes on this big speech too, like, you know, like says something like, where nobody comes up to you and says, rack up the balls, rack up the balls, fishy, or something like that. Like, so there's a lot of like, just this hard boiled type of stuff. Burt Lancaster at one point sits down for a dinner, and this waiter that comes up and he starts like doing all this stuff. And he goes, stop tinkering, pal. That horseradish won't jump a fence. Burt Lancaster again, he's like talking to Tony Curtis. He's like, I'd hate to take a bite out of you. You're a cookie full of arsenic. So
wow.
It's one of these kind of movies where like like everybody's got to like top each other with like these lines. And like I said, not even scratching the surface. When you watch this movie, you're going to be like, God, everybody is like talking like this the whole way through. And it's amazing. It's amazing.
I'm going to go with something from Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And I can pick a lot of moments, but I'm actually going to pick a text message moment. There's a part in the film where the CIA contacts Nicolas Cage and says, hey, Pedro Pascal's a bad guy. We need your help. He's kidnapped a girl. And so he starts unofficially working for the CIA, and they will routinely text him to check in, which I find a little bit odd. But at one point when he's supposed to be doing this job, Pedro Pascal says, let's drop acid. He really doesn't have much of an excuse. So he drops acid, and they're sitting on this bench in a town, really paranoid about these two guys they think are watching them. And he gets a text. What's her name? It's Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah, Tiffany Haddish.
She says, any updates? You find the girl? He types back, not yet. I'm currently on acid. What the fuck? He says, had no choice. Otherwise, cover blown. Donnie Brasco type situation. BRB. And that's it. And this is dying laughing.
This isn't like a great piece of dialogue in that movie, but the young Nicolas Cage going, Nick fucking! Like for, he holds it for like 30 seconds. Fucking!
He holds it for a long time. Shit.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a funny movie. All right. I've seen a couple answers here. Somebody says from House on Haunted Hill. Somebody says With a side of arsenic.
Yep. Stand by Me. Corey Feldman said, called a piece of shit and said a pile of shit has 1,000 eyes. was it Idiocracy? Brought to you by Carl's Jr. Fuck you, I'm eating. everything with the advertisements and the stores and stuff and Idiocracy is hilarious.
Oh, for sure. All right. You guys have answered before about your favorite athlete actor cameos. What about your favorite musician / actors or musician cameos?
If we were to do strictly cameo, I would say Huey Lewis in Back to the Future is one of my favorite all time.
Oh, that's great.
He's, you know, the guy who's at the band tryout thing and gets in that megaphone and is like, sorry, afraid you're just too darn loud. And then as far as musicians just having a full-on role, I thought that Sean Combs or whatever he was being called at the time, Puff Daddy or whatever, in Get Him to the Greek. What?
I just love that backhanded. Well, I don't even know if it was backhanded.
He was Puff Daddy and he was P. Diddy.
He changed his name like 7 times.
Like how are you supposed to know what era that was he was calling himself? But
I'm
anyway,
not gonna look it up.
Sean Combs in Get Him to the Greek is really funny in that role. As the guy who's like trying to get everybody to hit that whatever that music label or whatever, in shape or whatever, but he's really funny in that movie. Sean Combs has a couple of like acting turns that are pretty fun overall.
I still haven't seen Get Him to the Greek, and I'm not sure I should. Is it good?
I think you'd like it.
Okay, he's playing the same character. Jonah Hill is playing the same character he played in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Russell Brand is. Yeah.
Sorry.
Russell Brand is playing the same character, and Rose Byrne has a funny like small role as his off and on again girlfriend or whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people in that. That's one of those movies where you're like, holy shit, look at all these people who became big afterwards. That's one of those movies.
All right. For a cameo, I always like Josh Groban in Crazy Stupid Love as Emma Stone's would be fiance. I always like Harry Connick Jr. in a movie. He doesn't always make good movies, but
your favorite Harry Connick Jr. performance?
Probably Independence Day. Hope Floats is not a good movie, but he's good in it. I just like Harry. Maybe that's just my hairy bias showing up.
Probably not going to be saying copycat anytime soon. That's probably not. Yeah. No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the chat here, we've got every cameo in Walk Hard. Yeah.
Definitely. Especially the Jack White one where he's playing Elvis. That one's really funny.
Alice Cooper in Wayne's World. Yes. Mm-hmm. Weird Al in Naked Gun. Did you see the trailer with Daniel Radcliffe for Weird?
I saw a thing a long time ago. I haven't seen the new trailer, no.
The trailer came out yesterday, I think, and it looks amazing because they've hit every single music biopic trope, like, and most of it is completely fictionalized. Like, he has a raucous sexual relationship with Madonna. He's boozing and taking lots of pills when in real life he won't even cuss in any of his songs because he's a devout Christian. It looks awesome. Anyway, let's do one more. We have at least one more. Yep. What is something that an objectively bad movie can do to get you to enjoy it?
Typically, an objectively bad movie has to kind of know it's bad and just go for it at that point. You have to wallow in it, I think. And look, I'm no Showgirls fan, but that's where a lot of people have found enjoyment in that movie, is because if there's any movie that ever went for it, it's that one.
Yeah.
It bathes in the horribleness.
Sometimes literally.
Yeah, it does. And over the years, even people who have made documentaries about this movie and have talked about this movie, I am confused as to whether it was ever intentional. Not like where it's like, you know, The Room, where it was clearly meant to be serious and they just failed in every in every aspect. Showgirls is one of those movies where I think Verhoeven's doing his usual, like, this is America and this is he's doing his satire thing, but like, even as a satire, it's just hard to, it was like, are you being serious? Like, some of this doesn't seem serious, and then some of it seems very serious, and it's mixed in and everything, and I don't know. So, I think you just have to go for it. I think you have to go really hard. And I can't come up with an example right now. Like, the go-to is Ocean's 12. Ocean's 12 is objectively not a great movie, but they really sort of went hard into the insanity of it. Julia Roberts playing Julia Roberts, and the little dance through the lasers that Vincent Cassell does, and they're obviously on vacation in Europe and enjoying their vacation more than they are making this movie. But I really think that's what you have to do if you're making a bad movie. You have to just kind of go with it.
I think as long as there's one performance where the actor is just having a blast and going for it. And my example would be Jake Gyllenhaal in Ambulance.
Yeah.
That can keep me interested in a film. I think he helps Ambulance more than anything else about that movie. Some people really like the drone camera work, and that's cool. Some people like the adrenaline speed-like rush nature of the film. But for me, what made that movie enjoyable in some way was Jake Gyllenhaal. I'd never seen him play a character quite like that. And he also takes a big old swing in Okja, which is a Netflix original. so he's got some interesting performances in him, and he was really engaged in this character for some reason and having a blast. That shone through. I think without his performance, I would be even harder on that movie.
That expression he makes behind a ski mask is still with me to this day because it's just, I don't know. A lot of people cannot get an expression through on a ski mask, and he somehow does. So,
yeah. Patrick says the best way for me is to just show me everyone involved was having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody else mentions Jake Gyllenhaal in Ambulance. Being self-referential can help. I think that's certainly true. I think there's a couple of Kevin Smith movies here or there that earn some more laughs by being self-referential.
Yeah.
Even if they're not like high quality cinema or whatever.
But if you're making shit and you don't realize you're making shit, then that's where you go. Like, people find the unintentional humor, but that only lasts so long for me, really. If you're making a movie and you're like, man, this is terrible, and then you just decide to make some quirky decisions along the way, it really, really sells in the end. So,
all right. Well, I think that's a good place to call it for today.
All right.
I do want to announce that we will be moving the live portion of this show, which tapes on Mondays or Tuesdays, a week before public release on Mondays. We're going to eventually be moving this to Twitch, which shouldn't change anybody's experience very much, except that it will open up the chat to more people, which we will have some moderation in place. and we're looking at doing that next week. We'll communicate fully with you, but we're trying to grow our Twitch presence a little bit by having regular content there. And we also want to have a little bit more interactivity during the live portion. You guys are OG interactivity, and we'll come up with a special badge or something for you or give you priorities when you submit questions or what have you. But anyway, that's coming likely next week. Didn't want that to surprise you. Your homework for next week is Worst Person in the World. You can find that on Hulu or to rent in many streaming services for $1.99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you again for coming out and watching us and everything. And hopefully you'll follow us on to Twitch when that happens as well. So, all right. Well, that was a show. That was a show right there. That was a thing. So, yeah, we'll see you guys.
See you. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.